This is Cynthia L. Simmons of Christian Authors Guild, and you are listening to KX Spotlight, where we interview authors and VIPs in the writing industry. Today I have with me Eddie Jones of Lighthouse Christian Publishing. Welcome, Eddie.
Hey, Cynthia. Great to be on the show.
It's conference time. Christian Authors Guild is offering Catch the Wave Writing Conference in August, and ACFW is in September. We will be presenting manuscripts to acquisition editors, and I know you do this, Eddie. Can you help us to get that little extra bit of something so that we can get our manuscripts in print?
Sure. The first advice I give conferees, I've done this, I think this year I'm probably going to serve on faculty at probably 12 different writers' conferences, and I may approach it a little bit different than some other faculties, but there is kind of a trend that all the faculty see when we're meeting with conferees, and that is that the conferees sometimes just get so jazzed up with the appointment. They've been told how to make their pitch. They've only got a couple of minutes to really make that pitch and get the editor or the agent's attention, and so they've prepared their one sheet and they've prepared their proposal. But then they come in, and for us, for the faculty sitting across the table, it's almost like we're getting a fire hose in our face. So one of the things I kind of do with almost every conferee is I kind of let them just kind of spill everything out, and then I pause, and then I ask one or two questions that really gets to the heart of what they're trying to say. And oftentimes that kind of throws them off their game because they came in, again, thinking they were going to kind of control the conversation. But oftentimes the faculty wants to know a little bit more about the person sitting across the table than they do the project. And in fact, that's probably maybe the best advice I could give a conferee is, in the end, you just got to keep in mind that editors and agents are people. This is a relationship business. And so no matter how good the pitch is or the project is or even how well your writing is, if the editor or the agent doesn't feel like they can build a rapport with that author and they can establish a relationship, they may not be that jazzed about the project anyway. And that's, like I said, that's kind of one observation I've made throughout the years.
What kind of things should you do beforehand, and what should you bring to an interview?
Definitely bring your one sheet, and bring your proposal if you have it. Do not expect the editor or the agent, in most cases, to take that proposal with them. In fact, most of us may not even take your one sheet. But it's good for you to have that because we're going to ask questions and you're going to need to refer to that proposal or that one sheet to answer those questions. We may ask, you know, what your marketing is, and you need to be able to quickly flip to that section of your proposal and give us the numbers we need for your marketing. How many Facebook friends do you have, Twitter followers, what's your Pinterest reach, are you on Goodreads? And so what's your platform, and can you market the books? We may ask those questions. You need to be able to get your hands on that information quickly. But most editors and agents that come to conferences, in a lot of cases, they're flying in, so they just don't have room to take printed copies of anything back with them. So oftentimes we will ask, we're interested, to email us the proposal as an attachment or the one sheet as an attachment. If you've got it on a flash drive, that's good too. When I go to conferences, somebody gives me a flash drive, I can take that back to the room and transfer it to my laptop, and then I have it with me. And for me, that's really helpful because, again, I'm a lot of times flying to conferences, and if I've got the proposal when I leave the conference or the one sheet, then I can, in the airport and on the plane, I can kind of look over a lot of what I've just talked with an author about and make a decision before I get home. And if I don't do that, then it's back to that three-month turnaround because we get home, we're so inundated that then it just takes forever to filter through everything. So that would, be one of the things I would encourage them to do. Put your proposal or your one sheet on a flash drive, invest in that $10, and be selective about who you're going to give it to. Obviously, you don't want to go broke giving away flash drives, but that's probably a better option than suggesting that a conferee give an editor or an agent a hard printed copy of their proposal.
Before you go to the conference, you would have looked at the different websites and you would know what the publishers accept, so that when you get there, you're handing that publisher a manuscript that he would be willing to publish.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's Cynthia, you bring up a good point. That is key, when a conferee is meeting with a faculty member or an editor or an agent. You need to know in advance what that house is looking for. And if they're not looking for the project that you're pitching, then be respectful of that and don't argue with the editor. And a lot of cases, the houses don't necessarily tell you. I mean, we put up submission guidelines on our website most times. Lighthouse Publishing of the Carolinas doesn't, because we don't take unsolicited manuscripts. And so usually the conferees don't know in advance what we're looking for unless we tell them. But most major houses, they've got their submission guidelines up on the site, so you know what they're interested in purchasing before you get to the conference. But if you get to an editor and they used to do historical and you're pitching historical and they say, you know what, we just stopped taking historical, we're moving away from that, be respectful of the editor's words and don't argue with them. You know, don't say, well, oh man, this is the best historical ever. If they say they're not taking it, they're not taking it. And then, you know, you've got a 15-minute appointment. Try to learn as much as you can about that editor and what they are looking for, because you've got that valuable time and you don't want to waste it. So even if that house isn't a good fit for that current project, it's a chance for you to build a relationship and a rapport with that editor and then maybe come back with a different proposal that does fit what they're looking for.
What do you like to see on a one sheet, just so that everyone knows what we're talking about?
Each editor and agent looks at the one sheet a little bit differently. But what I tell authors, I view it just like a reader would in a bookstore. For me, a one sheet is going to take about a minute to go through at the most. So I tell authors, imagine you're going into Barnes & Noble, you're standing in front of a bookshelf, you pick up a book off the shelf, and you scan the front cover. That's going to give you the title, the author, if there's a tagline that goes with that title. You know, the one that comes off the top of my head is, I think it was the second Jaws movie where it says, just when you thought it was safe to go back in the water. You know, something to that effect. One man, one bullet, one chance. You know, that would be the tagline for a action-adventure story or something. So you've got your title, your tagline, your author name, and probably, in some cases, you've got some visual element on that one sheet that hints at what you think the cover might look like. It's not that you're designing the cover, but if it's a romantic beach read, you're probably going to have a picture of a sunset or a sunrise and a beach and people walking on the beach or something like that. So you're going to have maybe one visual element, but you don't always have to do that. Some editors and agents don't want to see visual. But then beyond that, Cynthia, it's that back cover copy. It's the promise of the book, it's the premise of the book, and it's the payoff for the reader. So I'm going to read probably a couple of paragraphs that's going to describe what this book is, what its promise is, what I expect to get from the book as the reader, and that's going to tell me whether or not, as a reader, I'm interested in that book, and as an editor, it's going to tell me whether or not I'm interested in talking to this author about this project.
But your proposal is going to be a bit longer than that, correct?
Yeah, boy, I teach at a lot of conferences about how important that proposal is. And so normally I recommend authors, if they don't know how to put a proposal together, to just Google Michael Hyatt book proposals. You'll find it on the Michael Hyatt website. It's like $20 for the nonfiction version, $20 for the fiction version, and it's one that I recommend. But that book proposal is everything. What I tell authors are, imagine you're going to apply for a job, and so you show up for that job. It is the kind of car you drove when you showed up for the interview. It is the wardrobe that you wore to the interview. It is your hairstyle. It is your nails. It is whether you have perfume on, whether you have too much perfume on. It's your resume. It's your shoes. It's your references on the resume. That's what your book proposal is. It is everything about your project and you, because when that proposal gets to the editorial committee and the publishing board and they're making a decision about your book project, the only thing they can evaluate is that proposal. That's all they have. And so they're going to read through, and the one sheet that you had is going to be incorporated into the proposal. There'll be parts of that one sheet in that proposal, but then everything else will be in there as well. Your full marketing plan, your bio, your endorsements, if you have any endorsements from other writers or key figures within the industry. Definitely your first 50 pages of writing are going to be in there. If it's a nonfiction book, it's going to be your table of contents and sample chapters and things like that. But I guess the one piece of advice I would give authors is don't shortchange yourself on the proposal and do it in a hurry, because that is the only thing we have to evaluate you on. And when it goes up to the pub board, it really doesn't make any difference who you are or whether or not we met you at a conference. By then, there's been enough time distance between when we met you and when we're evaluating your work that we have to judge it based on that proposal.
What happens if you get tongue-tied? Because that has happened to me. I ended up having to meet someone, I wasn't prepared, and for some reason I swallowed my tongue. What do you do?
It does not make a difference. Like I said, editors and agents, we have done this, most of us, long enough to know that that's just part of the drill. What I would suggest is when you get tongue-tied, stop talking, look down at your lap for a minute, compose yourself, look up, make eye contact with the editor or the agent, and say, you know what, I just lost my train of thought. I guess the one thing I want you to know about my proposal is that if you've been suffering from cancer, there is hope. And my story talks about how there's hope coming out of cancer. Whatever your pitch is, come back to that one key point and then pick up from there. But we don't care if you get tongue-tied. I mean, that's part of the business. We understand that.
Here's a hypothetical situation. What if you have a wonderful idea, you write really well, but your platform is just a little iffy? Does that mean that you're an automatic zero and you shouldn't even try till later?
It doesn't make you an automatic zero with every publishing house, but it does make you an automatic zero with a lot of publishing houses. A lot of houses and or agents are going to probably tell you, I love your concept, I love your writing, and I love you. I mean, you just look like a wonderful author, like somebody I'd love to work with. And I will encourage you to come back, grow your social media platform, your reach, and come back and pitch to me again next year. You will hear that often at conferences. And so in your mind, you're going, oh, man, that was a no. And it's not a no. It's a wait. It's a comeback later. For other houses, smaller houses like Lighthouse Publishing at the Carolinas and some smaller indie houses, the platform is important, but we're not going to necessarily say no because we know the book is going to take about a year to come out anyway. And so that gives us and you a year to help you grow your platform. And so we may take an author on who's got a great project, a great premise, and is a terrific writer, and we'll just help them grow their social media along the way, and then trust by the time the book comes out, they've done the things they need to do to get that influence.
What about your website? Do you look at that?
I do not personally go look at it. I will tell you, I'm not going to speak for all the publishing houses. Obviously, I don't know how their inner workings of all of them work, but I will tell you that an awful lot of editors and agents, when they get into that the pub room, pub board situation, when they're evaluating that book proposal, they might be looking at your website. They're definitely looking at your Amazon presence. They're seeing what your previous books are on Amazon, what was the sales ranking, what were the reviews. So from that, they can get an idea of how well the book sold. And so that's one of the reasons I tell authors when they're considering self-publishing a book, and we haven't gotten into that, but if you're going to self-publish a book, it better be great. Because if you self-publish a book and it winds up selling 300 copies and the sales rank is in the 500,000 or something like that, and you only had 3 reviews and 2 of them were bad, that almost kills your career before you get started. You may have a great proposal and your second book may be wonderful, but because you've got that bad book out on Amazon, that's going to hurt you. And you can't get that book down. Once it's out there, it's up on Amazon. You can't take it down. So as to whether or not the editors and agents look at the website, sure, sometimes we'll go to the website and look and see what's there. But again, that's not that big a deal because if you've got a web presence but the website's not the latest and greatest, we can come back and recommend that you hire somebody to improve it and we'll encourage you to add these elements to your website.
What about the writing? Do you expect that to be absolutely 100%, or would you accept a project that's maybe close but needs a little tweaking?
It's got to be stellar. Well, I'll tell you, Cynthia, when I get a proposal, I don't even read the synopsis. I don't read the marketing plan. I don't know who the author's bio is. I go straight to that first page of writing, and I start reading. And if I can get down to the first page and I'm still reading, then that's a good sign. And I'll read to the second page and maybe to the third page. I usually stop around the third page. And if the reading has engaged me, then I go back to see what the synopsis of the story is to figure out where the story's going. But if the writing's not there, there's really not much we can do. You almost have to be at 80 to 90% there with your story, meaning that when the editor gets that story, even if they contract you, they're only going to improve it about 20% because they don't have time to go in and do the rewriting for you or be your critique partner. So it better be almost dead on when you submit it to the house. And if it's not, they're probably going to say no because they just don't have the staff and the time to go in and fix it. So I will say that because one of the things that sometimes happen with houses is we will read that first 50 pages and it'll be great. It'll be wonderful because the author has spent a year or 2 years working on that first 50 pages in that proposal. And then we get into the rest of the story and we find out, oh man, this thing's got problems. Well, it's because they didn't spend the same amount of time on the rest of the story. So sometimes we'll get snookered that way.
Is that also true for a nonfiction book?
Yep. The thing about platform and who you are as an author, in the end of the day, none of that really matters. And it sounds kind of counterintuitive to say that. But if you've got the platform to get your book noticed, then that's great, because then people will pick up your book and start to read it. But if the writing's not there, if the book doesn't do anything for the reader, then it still doesn't make any difference, because they'll return the book. If it's a Kindle or a Nook version, they can return the book and get the money back without any problem. And if it's a print book, then they may just not finish reading it, but they're definitely not going to tell anybody about the book and to recommend it. The writing is the only thing that really matters at the end. It has that book on a nonfiction side. Does that book change somebody's life? And if so, in what way? And if you're writing nonfiction books and it's changing somebody's life, if it's giving them hope where they didn't have hope before, if they're taking that book and putting it by their bedside and reading a few pages each night, you know you've got a winner book, and it's going to make a difference in somebody's life, and they're going to tell somebody about it.
And that's the reason that we're writing.
Yeah, I mean, we are, as Christian writers, you know, we are one of the last defenses. I'm not saying we're the only last defense, but we are. If you look at the landscape, we are part of the defense system. And if we don't do our job, there's a hole in the line and the enemy just keeps pushing us back.
We need more of the truth these days, written in such a way that people are captured by it. It has to be professional, because people are watching the news. The media is perfect. And if we are less than that, we turn people off. Our message is more important than that, because it's eternal.
Yeah, yeah.
So we got to be good.
We got to be perfect. I think you're probably hitting on the old trend within Christian publishing used to be, it's what I call the using Christ as the crutch mentality. And so when I tell authors, you know, don't use Christ as a crutch, they go, what are you talking about? And I say, well, if you can write a story, especially in fiction, and never mention the word God or Christ in the story, but his truth comes out, then you have not used Christ as a crutch, meaning that you haven't slapped the sign of the fish on the back of the book and going to get people to buy it just because you've got that symbol on it. And that's how good we need to be. We need to be just like Jesus when he told parables, and he didn't mention God in his parables in a lot of cases. He just told stories, and the truth of God was in that story. And then he would close with a question of, you know, who is your neighbor? He who has ears, let him hear. Go and sin no more. You know, that was as much preaching as he did in most of his parables.
And the truth changes lives. That's a good reason to write.
Great reason to write. There's never been a better time to be a writer than there is right now.
Eddie, I appreciate your time. You've encouraged me, and I know you've encouraged other authors out there. We really appreciate you helping us get ready to present. Blessings to you on your ministry.